The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
And welcome to, and thank you for listening to Sports Talk 1240. This is hour one, and I'm not used to being here at this hour. I'm so used to doing hour two, so forgive me for being a little bit frazzled at the beginning. For hour one of Sports Talk 1240, I am your host, Andy Shukov, and we'll be taking you through till 9 o'clock when John Harding and Gary Panters, I think I might have flipped their names around. I hope I didn't. They'll be coming into you at 9. This weekend has just been a very exciting week in sports, and the last 24 hours have been so crazy, especially here in New York. I haven't slept, and in this business, you can't sleep, because you sleep, you miss something. That's one of the benefits of working the overnight shift. At 4 in the morning, I'm sitting there, I'm flipping through Twitter, and you were hearing the rumors that the Yankees were in play to make a big move, and right around 4 a.m., that's when it hit. And Joel Sherman came across, and God bless him for, burning the midnight oil, or in that case, the 4 a.m. oil, to tell us that it was pretty much a done deal, and that Giancarlo Stanton, pending a physical and his approval, would become a New York Yankee. And more details started coming out, where we saw who was going to be part of this trade. In addition to the Yankees taking on $265 million of the remaining $295 million of Stanton's deal, the Yankees will be sending Starlin Castro, Jorge Guzman, a single-A pitcher, and Jose Devers, another low-level prospect. Props to the Yankees. They got the NL MVP for a song and a dance and two prospects. You got to hand it to Brian Cashman. He took the new Marlins ownership. And because Stanton had pretty much said, I'm going to one of these four teams, and that's it, he had all the leverage. We got a good show for you tonight. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. We're going to have Greg Kaplan, host on Blue Shirts Breakaway Rangers podcast. So we're going to talk some hockey with him. Get his thoughts on the Stanton deal, and we're all New Yorkers. We all want to see these things happen. Well, maybe you do, and if you're a Mets fan, I'm sure you are probably not very happy about that. And we'll talk about yesterday's game against the New Jersey Devils, tomorrow's game against the Stars, and just basically what the Rangers have been up to for the last 3 weeks. Blue Shirt Breakaway. I did a show with Greg. Probably February, right around the trade deadline. And he asked me if they were going to get Kevin Shattenkirk at the trade deadline. I said no. I thought they were going to do something small, but I have one of those track records of I say something, the opposite happens. So he took that as they're going to get Shattenkirk at the trade deadline. They wound up getting him at free agency, so it all kind of worked out in the end anyway. So we'll talk to him about that. And one of his favorite questions that he likes to ask his guests, and we'll get to that with him, because I never got to hear that question, so that'll be fun for everybody. And he is now joining us, host of Blue Shirts Break with Greg Kaplan. Greg, thanks for taking the time.
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
I'm doing all right. The Rangers are playing pretty well. They're 7-3 since Thanksgiving, including a 5-2 victory over New Jersey yesterday. What have you seen from them over the last 3 weeks that you've been impressed by?
The thing that really has stood out to me, it's been odd. The team has been without Mika Zibanejad the last couple of games, and the biggest fear this team has had all offseason heading into this year and even when this season started was their center depth. But Kevin Hayes has really stepped up his game. He's become one of the focal points of this Rangers team, and his play with Rick Nash on his wing has truly been remarkable, and it's great to see, because in order for this team to be successful in the long run, they desperately needed a center to step up, and they're getting it at the right time with Kevin Nash. JT Miller's been fantastic too. since he's moved from wing to center. But there are still concerns with this team. I mean, as hot as they've been, they're not even in a playoff picture right now. They're still on, outside looking in.
And that goes to show you how impressive the Metropolitan Division is. There's such a logjam there at the top that the Rangers, as well as they've been playing, are still not in even in a wild card spot.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's crazy to think that the six teams in the Metropolitan, one will absolutely miss the playoffs, and it's going to be right now the Rangers are the sixth team, but the Capitals are right there, the Penguins, Devils, Islanders. Blue Jackets have looked great, so I don't think the Blue Jackets have anything to worry about, but of course there's two-thirds of a season to go. But, yeah, no, it's insane, and it makes you think of just how crazy the playoff structure is in the NHL, the fact that the Atlantic Division is going to have an inferior team make the playoffs guaranteed just because that's how the cookie crumbles. It's almost unfortunate.
Does that make you kind of wish it was still the 1-8 where it didn't matter and you could have six teams come out of one division?
Yeah, I've always thought in order for you to have a successful playoffs, your eight best teams from each conference should be in the playoffs. I don't think a team should have a benefit because they simply have to play weaker opponents in their division. If you're a league and you want to determine who the best team is in any given season, you should have your eight best teams in the playoffs. But, of course, it's going to sound like sour grapes because if the Rangers weren't in this position, would I be saying the same thing? I don't know. It just goes to show that a season like this where one division is just clearly better than the other, it makes you a little frustrated.
Let's go a little bit more into last night's game. 5-2 victory over the New Jersey Devils, and the Devils have been one of the surprising stories at the midway point of the season. You know, everybody's played about 30 games at this point, and the Devils have been up there in the top of the Metropolitan Division, even after trading Adam Henrique for Sami Vatanen. They're still just continuing to roll on. Nico Hischier, the number one pick, has really cemented himself with a good role on that team. The Rangers go out there, and they put up a five spot in New Jersey, including Matt Zuccarello scoring two goals and taking the team lead in points.
Yeah, the Devils have been great this year. This isn't meant to take anything away from them, but I think they've been playing a little bit with fool's gold. Their defense it might not be as troubling as the Rangers, but it's troubling, and they have a hard time possessing the puck as much as other teams in the Metropolitan. The Rangers last night, they just controlled the play for the first two periods of that game. They were suffocating the Devils in their own zone, and when your goalie may not be having the best night like Kincaid was having last night, it can hurt, but Keith is fantastic. Corey Schneider is fantastic. Both those guys kind of prop up their defense much of the same way Henrik Lundqvist does for the Rangers. I think the Devils are going to come back down to earth a little bit. I don't know if they're going to be – they've gotten off to such a hot start that it's one of those things where you wonder if they've put enough space between them and some other teams that maybe they can keep it running. But, I mean, we've seen it now. They're coming back down to earth. They're only a point ahead of the Rangers. And like we just said, one team from the Metropolitan is not going to be able to make the playoffs. And if I had to say which one of the six I would expect to fall out of contention, it'd be the Devils. And that's, again, that's not a knock on the Devils. They're completely a year ahead of where they should be in terms of their rebuild. This was not supposed to be the year the Devils make a strong playoff push. They were always going to be better than they were last year, but this is an extremely young core that is only going to get better over time.
And we're talking with Greg Kaplan here. A couple of other players that I've been very impressed with over the last month or so. Michael Grabner and Jesper Foss. Especially Grabner. I mean, that guy, we saw it last year, and we're seeing it again this year. He's got a nose for the puck and knows how to put it in the net, and that's been a huge boost for this team.
It's been great. You mentioned Jesper. I would actually say Jesper has been more impressive to me than Grabner. Some of what Grabner is doing, again, it feels weird to say it's unsustainable because this is the second straight year that Grabner is doing it for the Rangers. But I don't know if they've just found some magic elixir with him, because he wasn't this kind of player before he came to New York. He was a fourth line grinder for the Islanders and the Maple Leafs before the Rangers picked him up, and that's exactly what they were expecting him to be. And like you pointed out, he is, his goal percentage or his shot percentages are both through the roof since he's come to New York. But Faust has really blossomed. This is a guy that every Ranger fan has, for lack of a better term, underappreciated a little bit just because he's been so reliable on the fourth line. But he's scoring at a higher rate than he's ever scored in his career, and he plays extremely well for whatever reason with Rick Nash and Kevin Hayes towards the top of the Rangers' forward lines, and he's opening eyes. I don't know if the Rangers would be in the position they would be right now without Jesper Foss in the lineup.
And that's a big statement to make about someone like that, where we've seen Coach Alain Mignot like juggle the lines and trying to see what's going to work on a nightly basis, and playing Foss with Rick Nash and Kevin Hayes, that's been like that magic bullet that they've needed.
It's been interesting. I've had a lot of issues with Alain Vigneault. You and I have talked about previously some of my issues with Alain Vigneault. My issues with him haven't changed, but the one thing I do like that he does is he doesn't so much play top lines like teams traditionally do. He kind of plays a top nine, where his best nine forwards on any given night are usually going to play around the same minutes 5-on-5. And it does a couple things. It keeps lines fresh and able to maybe play a little harder, deeper into games against other teams that may be leaning on their top line to produce for them. And it also, it puts the pressure on the players to produce. It makes it so if you want to have more time on the ice, you have to be the guy that is helping the Rangers score goals or shutting down the opponent's other forwards. It really does put the responsibility back in the player's hands, which as a fan makes it a little bit more interesting. But at the same time, it can be frustrating because there will be nights where maybe a guy like Pavel Buchnevich is playing unbelievable, and for whatever reason, he's getting less 5-on-5 ice time because, again, Vigneault wants to spread everything equally.
We're talking to Greg Kaplan here. One of the things, when I came on to Blue Shirts Breakaway back in February, it was right around the trade deadline, we were talking about Kevin Shattenkirk, and you asked me if I thought that they were going to get Shattenkirk at the deadline. I said no, but I did lay credence to the thought that they would go after him in free agency, which they did. What are your thoughts on Kevin Shattenkirk 30-plus games into his Ranger career?
I think he's been as advertised. There's a population of the Ranger fan base that has been very critical of Shattenkirk, to which I have to say I don't know what you were expecting. He's been arguably the chief reason why the Rangers' power play is completely just improved from last year to this year. And he's been as good as you could hope at even strength ice time. I think before the season started and even a couple weeks into the year, I would have said put Shattenkirk with McDonough, put your best two defenders on one top defensive pairing and let them run. But his play with Brady Shea has been great, and he's been great for Brady Shea. I think Shea's game has taken a step forward because he's playing with a guy like Kevin Shattenkirk on a nightly basis. It's a great contract for the Rangers. It's a below-market value deal for a guy who basically gave the Rangers a hometown discount being from New Rochelle. And I could not be happier with Kevin Shattenkirk's play.
And one of the big things you mentioned was that how the play of Brady Shea has improved due to Shattenkirk's presence. We've seen Shea over the last couple of years make leaps and bounds improvements every year. And that's something I definitely see continuing, where I think he could be that next guy to be the top defenseman for this Ranger team.
Yeah, Shea has very quickly emerged as arguably one of their five most important players when you think of this team long term. His play defensively has been great, and he's been showing flashes of taking his game to a next level offensively that makes you just salivate as to what's possible with him. The problem with the Rangers' defense is, as good as Shattenkirk and Shea have been, the fact that those two have been paired together puts the Rangers in a weird position where they have to play someone like, or at least they feel like they have to play someone like Nick Holden on a top defensive pair. And that's just putting a guy in a position to fail. And that has been one of my chief concerns with Alain Vigneault this year, where his management of the defensive core has just been so poor. And you thought it was going to get better this year because the Rangers signed Shattenkirk. They made moves to bring in defensive prospects that seem ready to go. They made a massive trade of Derek Stepan to bring in a guy like Anthony DeAngelo. They re-signed Brandon Smith. They have all these defensive pieces, and yet we're sitting here on December 10th talking about Nick Holden getting top pairing defensive minutes. That doesn't make any sense to me.
I'm with you on that.
I honestly don't get it.
You know what the biggest problem is, and you know where I'm going with this. They didn't re-sign Adam Clendenning.
Look, I still love Clenny. He's been a fan of our podcast, and he's been nice enough to join us on an occasion. I still think Adam Clendenning is a very solid sixth or seventh defenseman on the right team, and felt like he deserved more ice time last year. The Rangers' real problem is Alain Vigneault just doesn't trust young players. Because there's really no reason why, one, Steve Kampfer should still be on this roster. Steve Kampfer is not an NHL-quality defenseman. I don't think he belongs in the NHL, if I'm being completely honest. But you have guys like Neil Pionk, Anthony DeAngelo, and Ryan Graves, all sitting in Hartford ready to go, that could be playing significant minutes for the Rangers right now. And they're just not, because for whatever reason, Alain Vigneault doesn't either feel like they're not ready or just doesn't trust them. And that to me is a shame, because as good as the Rangers have been playing, and they've been one of the best teams in hockey over the last 6 weeks, the frustrating thing about this team is you can see very clearly how this team could be better. And you think of how good they are now, they could be in a better position if things were just managed correctly.
So you think that there's a much lower ceiling to what they can accomplish right now?
Right now, yeah. I think this is the best the Rangers are going to play. And you can either hope that this play continues, or you can make moves to try and sustain this play and maybe take yourself to yet another level. It kind of goes along the fact of, you know, it's a little bit of confirmation bias where you think of, well, things are working, so everything must be good. But that doesn't necessarily mean everything is working properly. Just because you're winning doesn't mean you're doing everything you can to continue to win. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Alain Vigneault does things on a nightly basis that frustrates me. And it's a weird place to be because he's been arguably one of the most successful coaches in Rangers history. And I've been a guy calling for the Rangers to fire him for almost 2 years now.
We're talking with Greg Kaplan from Bluesers Breakaway. There's one thing that does concern me, and I don't know if it's a fact of being spoiled on what they've had in that spot for the last, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. Andre Pavlik behind Henrik Lundqvist, and Lundqvist isn't getting any younger. You think of what the Rangers have had at backup goalie for the last 4 or 5 years. You've had Antti Raanta, who performed admirably. And you had Cam Talbot, who after Lundqvist had that injury in 2015, played 25 straight games and basically put the Rangers into a position where they came within one game of going back to the Stanley Cup. And now they bring in Andre Pavlik after trading Raanta, and Pavlik hasn't lived up to it. He's got a goals against near 3.5 and a save percentage under 90%. So when you have Lundqvist, who's approaching 36, and he can't play every night. You can't expect that. But you need somebody back there who's not going to be giving up 4 goals a game.
Well, this is one of the talking points my co-host Ryan Mead and I have been arguing about almost all season. You mentioned Talbot and Raanta specifically, and I think Ranger fans forget that when Talbot and Raanta first started out as Rangers backups, they were less regarded than Andre Pavlik was when the Rangers got him. Talbot was a rookie the Rangers drafted out of Alabama Birmingham, which is not necessarily known for its hockey program. And Raanta had fallen out of favor in the Chicago Blackhawks system. So these were guys that the Rangers took flyers on and developed into what turned out to be starting caliber goaltenders. Pavlik is fine. Pavlik is, and he's proven to be fine. He stopped 40 shots against the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions on Monday when Hank had the flu. So this is a guy that can play NHL minutes and do so at least at a league average level. Some of his goal against numbers are inflated because, for whatever reason, Alain Vigneault has only given Pavlik 3 starts so far this year. He's come into relief for Hank, I think, 2 or 3 times this season. And any time you bring a goaltender in a relief role, he's not going to be able to perform as he would if he started the game. He's coming in cold off the bench. It's a completely different environment. It's not like major league relievers coming into a baseball game in the 7th inning. It's a completely different animal. So I think you kind of have to throw his overall numbers out the window and just look at how he's performed in his starts. And he's been fine when he's been given starts. And that's the other thing with Vigneault. We don't really know what we have in Pavlik until we see him a little more. It is irresponsible to keep running out Henrik Lundqvist as often as Vigneault does. There was no reason for Lundqvist to start last night's game. I know it was an important game against a division rival, and the Rangers are in a position where they're not even in the playoff picture at this moment because of their poor start. At the same time, you mentioned it, Henrik Lundqvist is 35 years old. There's no reason for him to be starting Friday night against the Capitals and then again Saturday night at home against the Devils. He shouldn't be put in those situations. You have to find time to start Pavlik, and you have to be able to identify those games before the season even starts so you have a plan in place. And the fact that Vigneault doesn't is, to me, an indictment of his management of the team. And again, my frustrations of him as a head coach come from these situations. But I think people are being hard on Pavlik. He's a perfectly average NHL goaltender, which is what you want as your backup goalie. We just have to see him actually play. We're not seeing him play. And that's on Alain Vigneault.
We're talking with Greg Kaplan from Blue Shirts Breakaway. I just want to talk about the podcast a little bit. You and Ryan Mead do a great job. How long have you guys been doing the show for?
I think we honestly just recently celebrated our 2-year anniversary. So we started it in the winter of 2015. All credit to Ryan. He's the mastermind behind the organized chaos that we do once a week. We started out as just two guys talking Rangers hockey because we couldn't find a podcast out there that we thought was being on a weekly basis to give people just a look into this team. And it's turned into a completely different animal where I get to talk with guys like you, Andy, on a Sunday night here on WGBB and just have a great time talking sports.
I've listened to a bunch of your podcasts, and when I came on, there was one question I was actually really excited to answer, and I never got to. And during the Aaron Boone press conference, I saw a reaction to this question that I'm pretty sure like you thought the world ended when Aaron Boone said a hot dog is not a sandwich.
I wouldn't say I thought the world ended. I thought it confirmed my feelings that Aaron Boone probably wasn't the right choice for manager of the New York Yankees.
So you believe because somebody thinks a hot dog is not a sandwich, which it isn't, that he's not the right fit?
Well, first of all, a hot dog is a sandwich. It has all the same properties a sandwich would. It's the exact same thing. Just because you want to call it a hot dog doesn't make it any less a sandwich. Second, if the Yankees' goal was to hire a more analytic-friendly mind for their managerial office, a man who is not open enough to consider a hot dog as a sandwich is a man that's going to keep his mind closed to some of the deeper workings of baseball analytics.
So do you believe that Joe Girardi thought a hot dog was a sandwich?
I think Joe Girardi would have said a hot dog is not a sandwich.
Okay.
He doesn't seem like the kind of guy that would be flexible on his definition of a sandwich.
Yeah, and I think we got a 1-1 tie here. I'm gonna throw it out to my engineer, Brian. Brian, is a hot dog a sandwich? Okay, I'm outnumbered here. 2-1. A hot dog.
I just met Brian tonight. He seems like a good guy to me. You asked me.
All right, Craig, thank you. one of the big things that I apparently was talking to you about it at 4 in the morning the other night, with the big news coming out of baseball that Giancarlo Stanton, as long as he decides to approve the trade, he's about to become a New York Yankee. What are your thoughts on that?
It's great for the Yankees. We actually did an emergency podcast last night that's available on our feed about specifically the Stanton trade. You can't even look at it as a trade. You kind of have to look at it as a free agent signing because the Yankees, they just didn't give up anything. And at the same time, the Marlins got everything they wanted to out of that trade, which is just the money off the books. They couldn't afford to keep Giancarlo Stanton because that contract was basically a poison pill for themselves. So they moved on from it. And as a Met fan, the trade is, I think, great for me because I no longer have to worry about Stanton hitting what feels like 30 home runs against the Mets every year.
He's the new Chipper.
He really was. Him, Ryan Howard, and Chipper Jones have ruined so many of my afternoons watching Met games because all they do is smack baseballs into the nether regions of Citi Field.
Stanton hit one of the longest home runs I've ever seen. I'm pretty sure the ball hasn't landed yet. He hit it over the apple in straightaway center onto the black. I mean, that had to have been 475, 480 feet. It was insane.
The only person I've seen hit a ball further at Citi Field than Giancarlo Stanton was Mark Reynolds, put one into the upper tank in left center. It was like a 495-foot blast that I didn't think people could put baseballs up there in an actual game. But for the Yankees, it's fantastic. You now have a lineup of Judge, Sanchez, Stanton, Didi, Bird. It's loaded. If I'm the Yankees, I'm looking to trade. I would personally trade Brett Gardner first and foremost. I think I understand why Yankee fans love him. He's a good baseball player, but he's a free agent at the end of the year. I don't see how the Yankees are re-signing him, especially if they want to make a run at Manny Machado. I would move Brett Gardner in a deal for a controllable starting pitcher.
I'd probably look to
trade Chase Headley too, because I don't know if you necessarily need Headley anymore. I don't know where he plays.
All right, Greg, before we let you go, how can people listen to your podcast?
So we record every Monday night, so we're actually recording a new podcast tomorrow evening that'll be up late Monday night, early Tuesday morning. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and SoundCloud. Those are probably the two easiest ways. If you got an iPhone, all you have to do is go to your podcast app. You can subscribe to us there. We'll show up on your phone as soon as the new episode pops out. We're on Twitter, at Blue Shirt Break. As Andy mentioned, I would say 85% of the Twitter is handled by myself. Ryan chimes in when I go to sleep because I work very weird hours. Which means I'm sometimes in bed before 9 o'clock. You can follow us on Instagram at Blue Shirts Breakaway, Facebook, Blue Shirts Breakaway, and if you so please, we're on Patreon as well at Blue Shirt Breakaway, where if you become a subscriber, we offer some special perks for all our subscribers, our Discord channel, stickers, merchandise, special podcasts, you name it, we'll get them to you if you come on board.
All right, Greg, thank you for taking time. We'll have to do this again.
Andy, it's been an absolute pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
You got it, Greg. That was Greg Kaplan from Blue Shirts Breakaway. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the Giants are a mess. The Jets left their offense at MetLife Stadium. And just because I want to, ASU beat Kansas. We'll be right back. This is Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the contact us form. And let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit Gustbuster.com and get your Gustbuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
And we are back here on Sports Talk 1240. I am Andy Suhoff. I just want to thank Gord Kaplan again for taking the time to talk about the Rangers and his podcast and Giancarlo Stanton and apparently a hot dog and sandwich. I disagree, but that's just me. Also got to thank my man Brian Graves, because without him, none of this is happening. Make sure you stick around for the second hour of Sports Talk 1240 as John Panarese, Gary Harding, and John Sweeney will be coming on. And they're going to be talking to Derek King, the former New York Islander. So you get me talking about the Rangers, you get them talking about the Islanders. And I'm kind of curious, and I hope they ask him this, what he thought the first time he saw the Fisherman jersey. I'm kind of curious what an Islander's reaction was the first time they saw that, when Steve Levy put it up with Kasperi's name on the back and turned it around, and you see that orange Fisherman. Ugh. I mean, I was only 3 years old when that happened, but I remember my first game, they wore that jersey, and I thought that was one of the most horrific things. I think the thing gave me nightmares, but that's neither here nor there. But that was some of the lean years of the Islanders, and right now this year is one of the rare Giants lean years. They're 2-11. If you would have said to me that a New York team was 2-11 this year, I'd have said, okay, yeah, the Jets are 2-11. And that wound up not being the case. The Giants are just an absolute flat-out mess. But good news. McDork is gone, and Jerry Reese is gone. So a new regime is going to be coming next year, and that's what you want. You want to see some new faces that are actually going to make a difference. But today was a day that they played the Dallas Cowboys, and the Dallas Cowboys needed to win today in the worst way imaginable. They're sitting at 6-6. Ezekiel Elliott's still suspended for another 2 weeks. And they come into MetLife Stadium. Eli Manning is back starting at quarterback. Steve Spagnuolo, everybody's favorite defensive coordinator here in New York, he puts Eli Manning back under center after Geno Smith was utterly atrocious last week in Oakland. And That was all Ben McAdoo's doing. So now that he's gone, Eli's back under center, and the Giants come out and get shellacked by the Dallas Cowboys to the tune of 30-10. That was a game. It doesn't matter if you don't win another game the rest of the year. Today was the day you had to win, because you knew that any Giants fan that was there today, and I don't know how many were there. I can't imagine it was that many, because it's just been a season from hell. But you know that once they announced that Eli Manning was starting quarterback, that there was going to be a very warm reaction for him, because they knew that he shouldn't have been taken out in the first place. And he comes out, he throws two interceptions. The running game is non-existent. They average only 3.5 yards a carry. Just not good. You can't do anything if you can't run the ball. That offensive line is still in shambles, and they must address that in the draft, in free agency. You back up the Brinks truck for whoever's the best offensive lineman available. Just blank check. Here you go. We'll get to the salary cap, and then we'll deal with it later. And Dak Prescott for Dallas comes out, throws three touchdowns, 332 yards, and Rod Smith. Who's Rod Smith? Well, because Ezekiel Elliott suspended, everybody else has to step up. And when Alfred Morris didn't, and my fantasy team is going to lose in the playoffs because of that, thanks. Rod Smith comes in, and no, it's not the Broncos, Rod Smith. Comes in, 160 all-purpose yards, 2 touchdowns. So if any of you had Rod Smith out there, you're thanking your lucky stars. Because he's basically the NFC's version of Rex Burkhead, doing pretty much everything the Cowboys ask him to do. The Giants are now 2-11, and this season can't end fast enough for them. I think they just want these next 3 weeks to just go by, and once the new year hits on January 1st, Black Monday, everybody's going to get fired. I'm guessing Spagnuolo's gone. The offensive coordinator is going to go. It's going to be a whole new coaching staff, whole new front office, and that's, I think, what they're going to need. And that's ultimately what's going to be what leads this team back to where they want to be. They're gonna cut the dead weight. Brandon Marshall, gone. That wound up being a disastrous signing. That man has never played a playoff game. That should have been your first warning sign. You saw what he did last year with the Jets, that he was part of that major problem in the Jets locker room. And the Giants bring him over and he does nothing. Then he gets hurt. And the Giants just tailspin. So next year they get a fresh start, which they really, really need. We'll see what they wind up doing, and they'll go from there. Then you take the other team in New York. They go to Denver. They're flying high. They beat the Kansas City Chiefs. They put up 38 points. Josh McCown was the player of the week. Put up 3 touchdowns. It was great. And then they left the offense at MetLife Stadium because they got shut out against a Denver Bronco team that hadn't won since early October. They had lost 8 straight games. They started out 3-1, lose 8 straight, so they were sitting at 3-9, out of the playoff picture, and they were one of the worst teams in football. And this is not a knock on Trevor Siemian, but when you think intimidating quarterback, Trevor Siemian does not, his name doesn't flash in neon lights like Tom Brady or Drew Brees or Aaron Rodgers or hell, even Eli Manning. Von Miller hasn't been himself this year. The team has not been good. And then the Jets come into town. This is one of those typical trap games. The Jets come in favored, and That's the immediate warning sign. This is the game the Jets are going to blow because that's what they do, and that's what they do best. They barely managed 100 yards of offense. How do you, as a football team, when you're playing 60 minutes, how do you get only 100 yards against a team that was giving up 30 points a game for the last 2 months? That is unacceptable. You put up 38 points last week, and then you put up this kind of dud? If somebody's head isn't rolling from that, that's mind-boggling to me. And then we got to see Bryce Petty play. Josh McCown had to come out early in the first half. He took a shot in the back, and Petty came in for a few plays, and then McCown came back in, threw an interception on his very first play from scrimmage. And then Petty comes back in the fourth quarter. And I think at this point, the Jets are sitting at 5-8. You might as well just let Petty finish out the rest of the season. You're playing in New Orleans. Then you have a game at home against the LA Chargers. And then finally, you finish off on the road in New England, where you're going to get smacked around, even by the Patriots' backups. You might as well let Petty play. You know, what's the point of playing Josh McCown? You're now pretty much out of the playoff picture by losing that 8th game. Like that, today was a game that they were serious about sticking around in the playoffs. This was the game that they needed to win. And they came out almost as flat as the Giants did, probably worse. I mean, at least the Giants put points on the board. It was only 10 points and not exactly the best day in the world. But they at least put up points. I think they scored a combined 13 points against the Cowboys this year. That's pretty sad. That is just not... And with Bryce Petty playing, that's a telling stat for Christian Hackenberg, that if the Jets aren't playing you, that you have no chance of being an NFL quarterback. The way that kid regressed at Penn State after Bill O'Brien left and James Franklin came in, and it just went down, 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 down. The Jets still managed to use a second-round pick on him. I to this day, I still don't understand that. And he hasn't seen one snap. He hasn't been active outside of the first game of this year because Petty was hurt, and they had to have a backup quarterback. That's the only time he's been active. And if you thought he was going to see a snap, I think you're more delusional than he is. He's got no chance. He's going to be one of those guys who, once the Jets cut him, nobody's going to sign him because he's just not a good quarterback. And it sucks to see somebody who's really not going to get that chance. But you have to go out there and earn it. And to this point, Christian Hackenberg hasn't earned it. And he won't earn it with the Jets. I fully see him getting cut at the end of this season. And I'll just start fresh. Speaking of, you know, starting new, or I guess in this case it's more like old, but today the Modern Era Committee of the Baseball Hall of Fame announced their results for voting. There were 10 guys on the ballot this year for the Modern Era Committee, and a lot of these names are familiar to a lot of people, guys like Don Mattingly. You had Dale Murphy, Dave the Cobra Parker, Louis Tiant, Tommy John, and not the surgery, just the man himself. Two guys have been elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame by the Modern Era Committee. Two Tigers greats. And they're going to be joined by a few more people come January when they announce the main ballot. But Alan Trammell and Jack Morris were elected today. And Trammell got 13 of the 16 votes, so he broke the 75% that he needed. Jack Morris got 14 out of 16. These guys won the World Series in 1984 with the Tigers. Morris won another World Series in 91 with the Minnesota Twins. Jack Morris is the winningest pitcher of the 80s. You know, people forget that. And his last year on the ballot in 2014, he got to 61.5%. So he fell short of the 75% he needed on the main Baseball Writers Association ballot, but he got 88% of the vote today. Alan Trammell, his max when he was on his and his last ballot was 40.1%, and he got 81% of the votes that he needed to get in. And then of course you have your the one guy who gets votes, but falls just short, and that would be catcher Ted Simmons. Got 11 out of 16. Came one vote short of that 12. That would have enshrined him into the Hall of Fame. And when you know you came that close, that just has to eat at you in the worst way imaginable. That you went and you got so close that you could taste it. They were calling your number 882-555-214, and as they're about to hit the last number to say, hey, you got in, they decided to hang up the phone. So he'll get another chance in a few years, but knowing that you got that close and get nothing, it's got to be gut-wrenching. Other guys on the ballot included Steve Garvey. He didn't even get half. Dale Murphy didn't get half. Don Mattingly didn't. And those are guys who, they were very good players. But it's called the Hall of Fame for a reason. It's not called the Hall of Very Good. And there are some players that you can absolutely make the case that they shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. And You'll throw in names like Bill Mazeroski. I won't dispute that. But a guy like Alan Trammell, who's arguably one of the most underrated shortstops of all time, and he had a wins above replacement more than, I think, if I remember reading correctly, 9 Hall of Fame shortstops. And it took him until the Veterans Committee to get him in. There's something a little fishy going on there. And then it also makes you wonder when his double play partner Lou Whitaker is going to get there. Because his stats were on the level of Trammell's, playing in the same city for the same, pretty much the same amount of time. They came up together, they won the World Series together, they probably turned more double plays together than any combo in the history of baseball. And when he was on the ballot for the first time in 2001, when Dave Winfield got into the Hall of Fame, he got less than 5% of the vote and was never on the ballot again. So it kind of makes you wonder what he has to do to get there when his numbers were comparable to Alan Trammell's, and Trammell finally got in. We'll see who gets voted in January by the Baseball Writers Association. I think it's going to be one of the biggest classes ever, because I think there's 4 players who rightfully have earned to be Hall of Famers this year. You have your first-time eligibles in Jim Thome and Chipper Jones. Jim Thome comes in with 600 home runs. You're not going to turn down a guy who never tested positive for steroids and hit 600 home runs. Everybody loves Jim Thome. And, of course, the Met killer Chipper Jones. Maybe it's just as a troll job. They should put a Met cap on Chipper Jones on his plaque in Cooperstown. I'm pretty sure Mets fans would probably turn green seeing that. And I'm pretty sure Braves fans would riot. So, you know what? I take that back. Let's not do that. And I think, finally, Vlad Guerrero gets in and Trevor Hoffman gets in. As they both got very, very close last year to being Hall of Famers, I think this is the year they finally get over the edge. And then 2019, we'll see another big class where you got Mariano Rivera, who will be first-time eligible. He'll get in. He'll get 90% of the vote without issue. And then you have Edgar Martinez on his last year on the ballot. He'll finally get his due diligence. He'll get in. And then I think that will be the year you start seeing the floodgates open. And that will be the year. 2019, book it now. And I hope Old Takes Exposed is listening too, because if I'm wrong, I want him to call me out on it. That 2019 is going to be the year that Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds get in the Hall of Fame. You heard it here first. We got about 10 minutes left to play with here, and I did this last month with Arizona State football, where I got a chance to gloat. I didn't think they were going to be that good this year. They wound up finishing 7-5, and they're playing in the Sun Bowl December 29th. But the last show I did, the night before, they had played against number 5 Washington at Sun Devil Stadium, and they put on their best defensive game of the year and upset the number 5 ranked Washington Huskies. And the fans stormed the field, and one of my friends got to take pictures with wide receivers, and I was super jealous. Today, it's basketball season at ASU, and who knew that ASU was a basketball school? And outside of James Harden and Byron Scott, and James Harden at this point was almost 10 years ago. They go into Fog Allen Fieldhouse in Lawrence, Kansas, where nobody wins. Since Bill Self has been the Kansas head coach, and he got there in 2003, and they put this stat up during the second half. He has won more Big 12 titles, 13, than he's lost regular season games at Fog Allen Fieldhouse. At that point, it was 10. Now it's 11. Because the number 16 ranked Arizona State Sun Devils upset number 2 Kansas 95-85. And that's, as an alum, I gotta give them their props. You know, shout out to the Sun Devils. Forks up, guard you, love it. I hope they're gonna be a top 10 team when the next rankings come out, and I can't wait for that, because that when I was in school, they were terrible. They made it to the NIT my freshman year, got destroyed by Jacksonville, and then the bottom fell out, and they just they couldn't get out of their own way. Now, they have signature wins against Xavier, who since ASU put up 100 on them and Trey Holder put up 40, they've been on the warpath since. And ASU this week, they played the local team, St. John's, beat St. John's, and after St. John's made a great comeback, that turnover with about 4 minutes to go just absolutely did them in, and ASU pulled away. Then they go to Kansas, take down Bill Self in Big Bay, Kansas. We're going to see a new 1-2 next week as Duke lost yesterday to Boston College. Number 2 Kansas lost twice this week because they lost to Washington, an unranked team. Well, they're going to fall quite a bit in the rankings. If ASU doesn't make it to the top 10, that would be a travesty because they've earned it at this point. And you could make the case that they are the best team in the Pac-12 because the University of Arizona, they've fallen off. UCLA, they have their own problems, but luckily they got rid of one because LeVar Ball, he's just out of his mind. And, you know, but I think UCLA is just glad to be done with that part of the problem. And USC, they're very up and down. So ASU's got a chance to establish themselves as the premier team in the Pac-12 this season, which could bode well for them come turning time. And I want to see Joe Lunardi be really friendly to them, give them a nice high seed, give them a good region, give them a good bracket, maybe put them on the East Coast so I can go see them play. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but you know, gotta give props to some of the top scorers today for the Sun Devils. Trey Holder put up 29, Shannon Evans with 22, Remy Martin, who big buzz surrounding him when he decided to sign with Arizona State. A lot of people were shocked, and he put up 21 off the bench. And you want to know how bench scoring is so important. Remy Martin had 21 off the bench. Kansas's bench, which was only 2 deep, put up 1 point. Out of their 85 points, they got 1 point off the bench. You're not going to win games if your bench doesn't score and if you have no depth. And that's going to be a learning experience for Kansas, that they can't run the same 5 players out there for 40 minutes and expect that they're going to win every single game. They'll win most of them, just not when they're playing those really, really strong teams that have good depth. Got about 3 minutes left here. We got right now, you have the Steelers and the Ravens playing, and the Steelers probably have a lot on their minds after what happened on Monday night with Ryan Shazier. And he underwent spinal stabilization surgery earlier this week, so I spent my best out for him. I hope everything is going to be good. The Steelers are currently up 7-0 with 6 minutes to go in the first quarter. Le'Veon Bell took a pass from Ben Roethlisberger, 20-yard touchdown. Boswell with the extra point. So that came actually just a couple minutes ago. So Le'Veon Bell doing what Le'Veon Bell does best and just making plays and making fantasy owners of his very happy. A few other scores around the league. The Buffalo Bills keeping their playoff hopes alive with a 13-7 win in snowy Buffalo, where I saw pictures from what happened there, and I'm surprised they could even see the ball. I'm thinking people in the stands didn't even see what was going on. Like they were just like, first down, okay, yeah, sure, we'll believe that. Then you have some games that really have good playoff implications. You had the Rams and the Philadelphia Eagles. And this one wound up being a shootout. 43-35, the Philadelphia Eagles win at 11-2. They clinch the division, but big problem. Carson Wentz went out with a knee injury, and when you hear knee injury, the first thing that comes to mind is torn ACL, and you hope it's not, because that would just absolutely be devastating for a team that had Super Bowl aspirations as recently as 3 hours ago, to lose your number one quarterback and have to turn to Nick Foles. And that, nothing against Nick Foles, but he's not Carson Wentz. If you're Doug Peterson, you're just praying that it's just a sprain or something small that Wentz will be out for 3 weeks. They'll have their bye week in the playoffs, and then he'll be back for the divisional round. You hope that's what's going to be. But if it's as bad as feared, the Eagles just have a just took a huge blow, and everybody else in the NFC is getting really excited, knowing the fact that they can face a vulnerable Eagles team in the playoffs. That just about does it here. I'm always got to thank Brian Graves for making it happen. Got to thank Greg Kaplan from Blue Shirt Breakaway for coming on. Got to thank all of you for listening. And make sure you, like I said earlier, make sure you stick around because John Panarese, Gary Harding, and John Sweeney will be coming on. They're talking to Derek King, so you won't want to miss that. Everything's good here. If I don't hear from you guys again until the new year, just want to say happy holidays, happy new year, and everybody enjoy. Thank you.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.